We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So here we go. Ho, ho, ho. Hope everybody had an unbelievable Christmas. I'm kind of bummed it's over. And I'm a little bit of a Christmas hater, a little bit of a Scrooge, a little bit of a bah humbug. But I'm almost 50 years old. My boys are up in Minnesota for this Christmas. And then Charity and I went to Chattanooga, and we went to Rock City, M.O., and it was the light display of all time.
Been there, done that.
So you've been to the Rock City Christmas light display.
A couple of weeks ago, we did Rock City, we did Ruby Falls, we did the Polar Express.
Did you really?
Did it all.
So we just did that over the weekend. Yeah. And Stan, it took the Scrooge and just flushed it out of me. And it turned me inside out. Charity and me on, it was Saturday night, we're at Rock City and walking through this and laughing and frolicking. And she's got a cider and I might have had something else in my Yeti. And we were having a blast, man. And like I was saying to M.O., like my energy's a little down today. I'm just a little like hungover. And he said it's Christmas withdrawal. I rarely feel this, my friend. So that's where I'm at this morning.
Man, I'm just feeling good, you know, to be able to step in on the morning show, midday show, handoff. I love Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm simple. Rick, and I don't know how much you get to hear us, you know, over the weekends, bloviating, but I'm a pretty simple guy, man. I'm healthy. I got ball to talk about. Long as I can get a decent meal, a little something in my cup, I'm good, bro.
Bloviating.
Yeah.
I like that. It's a new word.
Did you
just make it up, or is that your thing?
I think I got that from the dictionary of Stephen A. Smith edition.
Okay.
Out there somewhere.
It's bloviating.
Ation at the end of it. Bloviation.
Bloviation is palliation.
So in our slice of life, Emma, we're going to talk a little bit more about this Christmas hangover that we're suffering from right now.
And I feel your pain because we had about 12 parties in 10 days.
Woo!
And I got home from the last one last night at about 10 o'clock. Finally sat on the couch for the first time to catch up on some TV and ESPN and catch up on all the text. And I got a little depressed because I think I was turning the Christmas lights off for the last time. Because I'm that guy. I will say this. As much as I love Christmas, when it's over, it's over.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Yeah, I'm done.
When it's like Valentine's Day and you've changed the bulbs to red and white to match the box of chocolates, like, come on, don't be that guy. Get the ladder out. It ain't that bad. It's a beautiful day, actually, to be this cold. Get out there. Do what you need to do. Get the lights down.
If you have a blow-up Santa and you just put a heart over him to try to justify it being a Valentine's Day Santa, it doesn't count.
That's amazing.
But it's over. And you know me, and Stan, we've talked about this the past couple weeks. I am Clark Griswold. I am Holly Jolly Christmas. I love this time of year. But now it's over. It was great. It was a hell of a time, but I have a little withdrawal, maybe a little hungover. It's just over, and now we got to start taking everything down. But the good news is we've been gorging ourselves for the past couple of weeks with all these parties, and now we have like 4 days to try to squeeze into your sexy New Year's Eve outfit because everybody goes New Year's Eve party.
Oh, you got to go detox.
Yeah, I got to go detox.
Juicing.
Time to get ready for the party on New Year's.
There's definitely more of an overlay over my belt than there was before the Christmas holiday. I have not maintained my low-carb diet. I have not maintained my low-cholesterol diet. I have gone pig hog wild on the food. And M.O., you know that I'm a little bit of a hater on Christmas movies. So Christmas night, we get home, Falcons game is over, watch football. All right, Charity, you get the main TV. She pops on Christmas Vacation. I'm a little like, oh, God, this is like the 37th time I've seen this movie. Loved it. Loved every minute of it, like a once-a-year thing. And then she nodded off and went to sleep, and I watched Office Christmas Party.
How was it?
But we have to put that near the top of Christmas movies of all time. That and Bad Moms.
Is it a stoner movie?
No.
It's Christmas Party?
No.
I'm thinking
I would not classify it as a stoner movie.
I'm thinking of The Night Before. With
Office
Rogen.
Christmas Party. Yep. Hilarious.
I hadn't seen it, but anytime you're talking Christmas movies for me, Home Alone makes the list, man. Home Alone never gets old for me. Just watching some little white dude just outsmart guys. It's just absolutely hilarious.
Charity flipped that one out a little bit, too. I got sucked into Home Alone a little
bit. Home Alone
wasn't mad at it.
Now, when
I was mad at the parents for leaving him. My God. How are you leaving your kids?
They're on the plane. And they realize, oh, Kevin might not be with us.
It's ridiculous.
Hey, Stan.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have one last kid, if that's the problem.
Question for you.
All right.
The definitive answer. The people have spoken. Rick and John 929, our Twitter account. But Stan, we need you to speak on this one.
Uh-oh.
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Die Hard is not a Christmas
movie. My man.
Die Hard
my
is
man.
An action film that takes place during
Tell him, Stan.
The no, holidays. I like you. It's going to be a good week. It's going to be a good week.
All right, so Michaels is with us. It's not a Christmas movie. Okay. Bible dug into the point of that it is a Christmas movie. Jason Marks, Die Hard, a Christmas movie or not?
Hell yeah, it is a Christmas movie.
Come on, Marks.
Get out.
There's not one reference to Santa. Yep. There's no presents.
Here's how you know. When people
McClane saves Christmas, basically.
When they're selling it as a Christmas movie, you will see some kind of Christmas imaging on the billboard. It'll either be in the writing or there'll be some kind of imagery of Christmas. Hmm. There's not. It's Bruce Willis's face and a building blowing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was released in July. That's a summer action blockbuster. Christmas movies are released at Christmas. But, Stan, I'll tell you this.
But it was around Christmas time.
What was the voting, though? What was the voting?
The people spoke. 56% of the votes coming in. And it was a big one. We had close to 500 or 600 people voting on this one. 56% said, yes, it's a Christmas movie.
So, really? Bible wins, and Jason Marks wins.
Well, Bible's not here today.
That's
what's up.
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
With our fans, we have lots to play for, so we can't wait to see them. It'll be a great environment, Sunday evening in Atlanta.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been waiting for it. Here it comes. I'm watching the game on Sunday, and it's the shadiest game I've ever seen in the NFL. It's shady, super shady. But here's the thing. You can't look at this one game in a vacuum. Of Sunday. You have to look at both games together and merge 120 minutes of terribly officiated football. Because I had to go back, Stan, to my notes on the first game.
Right.
And I told these guys, I have never felt sleazier about a win that my team got in my life. Because there were a million bad calls that went for us. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I actually thought that Saints fans had a right to wiggle and whine after that loss. So here was the scoreboard. And I'm going to break it down in great detail in our next segment. 5-8. In that game where we beat the Saints, quote unquote, despite three terrible interceptions by Matt and the whole thing, there were five egregious calls that went against the New Orleans Saints and helped us win. But Sunday, Stan, there were eight egregious calls against our Falcons that aided the Saints in winning. And the bottom line is this. What goes around comes around, right? We got a win we probably shouldn't have gotten. They got a win they probably shouldn't have gotten. The refs should not be this involved in a rivalry this great, okay? They should be in a Cincinnati-Pittsburgh scenario to clean it up. But these are refs making game-changing calls in both games of a rivalry, and for that reason, I'm not into it. But Falcons fans, your team did not lose on Sunday. That was just what it was.
See, for me, and we talked about it on the fifth quarter show, me and Chuck Smith, I feel like as long as we're consistent, and it sounds like you are, you can't say for those, and there were people calling in, Rick, saying, oh, the Falcons got robbed Sunday. I was like, no. The first game, the Saints got banged 11 times for 82 yards in penalties. Falcons only had four. So as long as we're being consistent, we got to start there.
Exactly.
For me, I also think from game to game, the crews are different. And the officials, and we get on them all the time, they don't want to get it wrong because, you know, they get penalized and they want to be in playoff games and make more cash. So I don't think I'm not conspiracy theory guy when it comes to the officials. For me, what Sunday came down to, and we'll hop into it, I know, in the next segment, the Atlanta Falcons, in matters of trench play, they got to play with the big boys play at. And this is what happens. When you leave it to the officials to impact the game, was it a touchdown by Julio? Maybe, maybe not. But that's got nothing to do with free turning the ball over in the red area and so on and so forth.
And Stan, to that point, I want to try to explain, and you being a ball player might not listen to this, but I'm just a dude on the sideline. No, I mean that in a respectful way. But I'm a non-ball player who knows a lot about sports.
Sure.
We analyze the game a little differently. So sure. I want to find out what you think about this premise that all of the terrible calls against the Falcons in the first three drives of the game completely threw them off. In terms of the vibe, the positivity, how gassed up you are and all that. So just hold that thought for a second. I want to come back to that in our next segment. Big stuff happened yesterday in terms of the playoff picture. The Pittsburgh Steelers clinch a first-round bye, and the Philadelphia Eagles last night in a really ugly game, 13-10 winner, beating the Raiders. They clinched number one overall in the NFC.
Mm-hmm. Philly's defense is going to carry them, and I've been waiting for Philly's offense to feel the effects of not having Jason Peters out there at the left tackle.
Right.
And they've been able to kind of bandage that a little bit. That's what coaching does. The other teams in the league, when they lose certain positions, is just detrimental and it's devastating and they can't bounce back. Now, what we saw last night, I think, is more to Nick Foles. And ultimately, I think that's what's going to happen. When the Eagles have to go up against a Panthers D, a Minnesota D, I think Nick Foles is going to get exposed, perhaps a Falcons D. On the other side of this thing, I thought the Raiders gave a game away. Even on that final drive, Derek Carr has regressed so much. And Jack Del Rio is probably going to make the cut on this one. But coaching is huge. Flip the script on the other side. Bill O'Brien, you've got more dudes on your roster. The game shouldn't look like that. Even without Deshaun Watson at quarterback, 34-6 is just embarrassing.
Well, I mean, I call him Butchin O'Brien because I hate his play calling. He's way too conservative. And if he gets fired now, there's a twinge of unfair because you lost Deshaun and J.J. Watt and Wynton Merciless and all these great players. But I would not shed a tear if Bill O'Brien were let go. We got to talk about Christmas Day basketball yesterday in the NBA. And what's up? Stan Norfleet in for John Michaels. Wish John Michaels well here.
Absolutely,
on the day after Christmas, man. So all the conversation is about the foul that wasn't called. Kevin Durant defending LeBron James. Was it a foul? Mm-hmm. But I'm not feeling bad about it for a variety of reasons.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on.
Stan, let's back up to Christmas Day last year. Richard Jefferson tackles Kevin Durant from behind in Cleveland. No call. Game over. Cleveland wins. Mm-hmm. Garbage. Okay? This was garbage as well. However, let's back up. Who does LeBron James guard when the Warriors are on offense?
Is Iggy on the floor?
My point is, it ain't Kevin Durant.
Right. That's why I think who else is on the floor.
Who does Kevin Durant guard when LeBron's on the floor? LeBron.
He goes LeBron most
of
the time.
Okay, so LeBron gets all this credit for being the shutdown defensive player when he hides on defense the whole game.
Ooh.
And so now you've got Kevin Durant D-ing up against the MVP of the league this year. Let's not get it twisted. LeBron is the MVP.
As he is every year.
Okay, but he's going to win it this year.
Yeah.
So he's D-ing him up,
right,
and he gets a little physical with him in an ultra-physical game where they really weren't calling many fouls. So I'm supposed to be butthurt and feel sorry for LeBron? Sorry, I'm not here on the day after Christmas.
I just want consistency. LeBron did get fouled, although Kevin Durant played excellent D, and his defense has actually gotten better since he's been at Golden State. Five blocks for Kevin Durant. He did foul LeBron. It should have been called. I felt like it should have been called the Christmas Richard Jefferson incident that you're talking about. And I asked you this in the bullpen. Do officials, regardless if it's the NFL, NBA, whatever, are there certain moments in the game where they just have to get out of it and just let all-time elite athletes go figure it out?
Yes. And they did, because Kevin Durant maybe could have gotten his second tech when he did the little basketball thing with Calderon after he got an early tech, right? And Van Gundy's like, oh, kick him out of the game. I'm like, Van Gundy, sit out. I showed up to watch Kevin Durant.
Then how do we explain the Steelers getting screwed the week before with the officiating that takes place out there? Like, and that's crunch time. That's a crucial matchup.
Yeah.
That decides where home field advantage is going to be between the Steelers and Patriots. Where's the consistency?
Yeah, great question. Let's hear from LeBron and Durant after one of the most talked about plays of the season.
I lost it. I lost it on the left wing. It got me a little bit, but I lost that one. But the one right before, obviously the overturn one, he found me twice. But whatever. What are you going to do about it?
LB said not once, but twice.
Uh-huh. Stan.
Stop it.
LeBron James is the all-time NBA leader in getting calls from the official. Or no calls.
Other than Michael Jordan?
I saw a dude win the finals. It might be a push.
I saw a dude win the finals getting pushing a guy out.
No, I hear you. I hear you. But can we agree that of this generation, nobody's got more calls than LeBron James?
Is Kobe a close 1A?
Kobe did not get calls that LeBron James gets. All right, let's hear KD on his foul or not foul.
Phil Klein, it's probably the same play a bunch of those dudes on Twitter probably arguing about in 24-hour fitness that wasn't a foul. So they've been in that position before, but just not on Christmas at the Oracle Arena. So they know if they ain't call it, it's not a foul. But I'm sure if they get that call next week in 24-hour fitness, they're going to be pissed that it was off, that they called a foul. So keep that on Twitter.
Oh, is KD talking to me?
Was he talking to you? Were you trolling Durant?
No, no, I'm not a troll, dude. I got too much respect for
guys. You play hoops at Lifetime Fitness?
But I'm like, dude, why are you banging on us at Lifetime for trying to get a run in here, B? Goodness.
Awesome, man. Off to a good start here with Stan Norfleet. He's in for John Michaels, and we are going to take a deep dive into this Falcons loss to the Saints, what it means, how it happened. And I'm going to break down this 8-5 scoreboard on bad calls I've been talking about. We're going to do that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Slice of life question, simple. Have you ever left or been left by someone on a date? I know I have rudely ended a date when I knew it was going sideways. I've never actually left someone somewhere, nor has anybody left me.
John, in between my ex and my beloved bride, Charity, I arrived at a sushi place, and I forget the name of it right now. Kind of looked around the corner, and she's alone, kind of surveyed the restaurant, and she wasn't up to snuff, so I bailed.
Let me read some of these hilarious texts on the Solomon Brothers Simon text line. I left a girl at Longhorns when I found out she had 5 kids. Another guy said he left a date for his weed man. That's always important. One more text guy said, hey, unfortunately, a girl left me at prom for another dude. That's just low down. We'll talk some lowdown college
football. Yeah, but he was 26 at the time, yeah. So he shouldn't have been at the prom anyway. So.
Get your fix of Rick and John on iTunes. Search 92.9 The Game.
All right, we are back on a Falcons Tuesday, a.k.a. the day after Christmas. Rick Kamla and my new friend Stan Norfleet. John Michaels, we'll be back on Thursday, if memory serves. I'll be here Thursday, then I'm off on Friday. It is a sort of a mishmash of a week, but we are very, very happy to have Stan Norfleet in here because, Stan, you are a true blue hoophead.
And I love my ball, man.
I got a hoophead radar that it's like NASA radar. All right, and you are a true blue hoophead, man.
And you know
you're
what's
my
crazy?
Guy.
Listen, I've always appreciated your energy, respect what you do on the NBA TV.
Thank you.
MO holds you down. I listen to you guys, stream you guys all the time. But here's my thing, right? People don't know. Even though I played football, I was better at basketball. And my high school coach came to me in like 9th grade. He was like, "Look, bro, I'm looking at your frame. You can be a pass rusher and go get paid. With power forward skills, there's only one Barkley, dude. You're 6'4", 6'5", tops. If you ain't 6'8", 6'9", it's not going to happen. Put these shoulder pads on and go get some money." I was like, all right, I'll try that. But I love ball, man, always. My dream growing up, then I get back to my dream growing up, I wanted to play basketball. This is a true story. I wanted to play for Bobby Crimmins. So I'm originally from Atlanta, moved to Alabama, left Alabama, and went to Charlotte. I wanted to be number 34, James Forrest, James Norfleet, over there for Bobby Crimmins. And every time I come up and I see that dome over there, I'm like, yeah. Life ended up all right. I'm good.
I love it, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
But I love ball, too. I love me some NBA as well.
You're here with us right now, man, and we're happy about that. Hey, Falcons fans, are you going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the game? Join Carl Dukes and Bud Light this Sunday, 2 hours before kickoff for the Bud Light tailgate on the porch. And Bud Light famous among friends. So Carl will be out there, and it says 2 hours before kickoff because I bet you the promotional people left it open-ended because of the flex factor. And, yes, the Falcons and Panthers have been flexed to 425. I do have a little bit of a I told you so because, Stan, a week or so ago when we were talking about flexing this at Twin Peaks and Buckhead, and I was corrected. Because I told everybody they're not going to flex a game to the 8 o'clock window because then that would be an unfair advantage. Playoff teams, you know, the night game versus a day game. And I was told that, no, it can flex to the night. Okay, fine. Stand down. Well, you can't flex it to the night. There are no night games.
There aren't any, but they could have. Is the way I inferred.
Well, right, but they haven't done that.
They
don't play Monday Night Football
right.
in Week 17 because of an unfair advantage. They don't play Thursday Night Football the last 2 weeks of the NFL season because of a possible unfair advantage. Everybody plays on Sunday in the 1 to 7 o'clock window at some point.
If things had fallen differently, let's just say, if the Falcons Panthers and that was the only matchup in the NFC. Winner gets in, like winner take all.
Yeah.
I think that would have gotten flexed. The problem is
two,
Seattle.
To 8 o'clock?
To the 8 o'clock. The problem is
disagree.
The Seattle game. If Seattle was eliminated, and let's just say it was just Panthers, Falcons, it was just those two for that final spot in the wild card, I think they might have.
But if you're Carolina then, and let's say you lose the division to the Saints and you know have to play a wild card round game, you're going to be butthurt that you had to play till midnight on Sunday night,
yes.
Whereas your opponent for the next week's game was over at 4 o'clock.
Take care of your business during the week.
So I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm with you in terms of the hardcore approach. I'm always in for more, you know, live sports on TV, especially in primetime windows. But for the competitive balance, I think the NFL is doing that the right way. So, Stan, let's break this down. I want to go back a couple of weeks to the sleaziest victory in Falcons history. Guys and girls, we should not have won that game. Do I need to remind you that there were three consecutive possessions where Matt Ryan threw an interception? Yeah. Three. Okay, you don't win that game unless something weird's going on. So this is what the Saints could possibly stand, be butthurt about from that first game that the Falcons won. Jones and Poole crush Alvin Kamara, knock him out of the game.
Ball game right there.
No, but no flags, no nothing. Yeah. So, I thought it was a good hit, but if you're a Saint fan, you may be holding on to that. They got us on that one.
Sure. Okay, and there may be some helmet-to-helmet there as well.
Exactly. So Saints fans will give that to you. All right. Now, it is the 1-2 third drive of the game for our Falcons. It ended up with the Freeman walk-in touchdown to make it 10-3. Ryan is roughed by Sheldon Rankins. You remember that? The roughing the passer where he breathed on him and Ryan fell and they got the flag. Okay, Saints fans, you got a right to be butthurt about that. That was a bad call. At the end of the half, after the bad clock management by Quinn, New Orleans kicks a 47-yard field goal, illegal formation. They take the field goal off the board, and they don't get a chance to re-kick. Mm. Shady, yeah. Okay? That's three in the first half that the Saints Saints fans have a right to be butthurt about. Okay, let's go to the second half. You have, it says here, Atlanta holding Garland. First and 20 for the Falcons and a defensive holding against New Orleans. Now, I forget the exact detail on that, but Stan, at the time, 8 of 20 Atlanta first downs came on New Orleans penalties. Okay? So you have Saints fans have a right to be butthurt about that. And then the coup de grace is Sean Payton getting an unsportsmanlike conduct for coming on the field. And I said at the time, softest game-winning call in NFL history. These are the notes I take during the game.
As he shows me his notes.
Right. All right, so that's five reasons for butthurtness for Saints fans off that first game. Now, here are 8 reasons for butthurtness for our Falcons on Sunday. The Matthews holding call that took back the Freeman 26-yard run. Good call? Bad call? You tell me.
You can make that call anytime, though.
Was it egregious?
I don't think it was egregious.
Okay, that's one.
I think it was a solid call.
Okay, so that's one. Devontae Freeman, the unnecessary roughness on the second drive of the game. We're down 3-0. It sets up a 2nd and 22. Was it shady?
Slightly shady. Teetering towards shady.
Okay, so that's two. Same drive, second drive of the game, 4th and 1. You remember Sanu with the wildcat. I thought DQ should have punted the ball, but he goes for it. Freeman gets the first down, and they call a legal procedure on Derek Coleman.
You got to call it.
So they did get that
they
right.
They got that right. You got to call it.
All right, I won't take that
if
one.
It's a formation penalty, you have to call that.
Is it nitpicky? Were they reaching, or did you see?
I saw movement.
Okay. All right, so we won't count that one, Stan. And by the way, I'm asking Stan, you're like, Kamala, didn't you watch the first hour of the game, the first quarter? I was in my truck with Charity driving home from Chattanooga listening to Wes and Dave and John Michaels. And by the way, on the second drive of the game, I believe, Dave Archer was already kind of wondering about the shady calls and did say the word conspiracy. And Arch, I love you. I was with him. But I was kind of living through Arch's eyes watching it at that point. Yeah. All right, Stan, so that's two. So the scoreboard reads 5-2 in terms of bad calls in these games. Rick Kamla and Stan Norfleet here on the day after Christmas. Third drive of the game. Hardy's false start. Is that a penalty?
Formation. You can't do
it. All right, that's fine. I didn't even write that one down. Freeman, the personal foul, hands in the face mask. Were you okay with that?
I'm okay with it. Got to stay off a guy's face mask.
But do they call that every single time?
They do not.
Okay.
But and my point is, in that scenario, and another thing is, officials are told when it's bad blood, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. Cincinnati, mm-hmm. when it's games that it's known historically there's going to be bad blood and there has been issues, officials, depending on who the head guy is on the crew, they're told it's going to be tight. And if you don't adjust as a player and as a team, that's DQ and Sean Payton's fault if they don't have their guys ready to go in preparation for that stuff.
All right, so we'll agree to disagree on that. I think that was a third job against our team. Set up a 1st and 30. Of course, you then punt. But the Mohamed Sanu pass interference on the little pick play, Dave and Wes at the time thought that he was within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage, maybe a step outside.
That was nitpicky to me.
Nitpicky.
Yeah, that you can get a rub. I mean, there's been more egregious rubs than that they let it go.
Agreed. So that's four. Now, that set up 1st and 40, ladies and gentlemen. That was the 6th penalty for 59 yards at the time. You're 3 drives into the game. Shady. And then on 3rd and 30, you have Jordan hitting Ryan in the head. No call. Remember that?
Jordan, I don't remember Jordan hitting Ryan in the head, but I want to go back to what you just said real quick. At the end of the first quarter, as shady as it was, Saints were up 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Atlanta, and I get it, it's about chemistry and rhythm and all of that, but you're still in the game. They haven't put you at a points per game, if you will, disadvantage, so I can only let you cry wolf so much.
So, Stan, and to your point, I wanted to ask you this. I think that all of the disruption and all of the bad ticky-tack questionable calls just threw the whole thing off and allowed New Orleans a bad start themselves or a good start on defense for us, and then they eventually caught their rhythm because they weren't being hindered by the other guys.
See, I don't think
New Orleans... You don't buy that, or do you buy that?
I don't buy that in totality because if you look at New Orleans' numbers, everybody was below their average. Mark Ingram, Kamara, Drew Brees... And I'm looking at the box score here.
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas had a nice day. He might have been at his average. But by and large, their offensive output at the Saints was not what it had been coming into that game.
But let's give the Falcons defense credit for that. And what that tells you is the Falcons defense is doing what they've done all year, keeping the team in the game with a chance to win.
Deion Jones, excellent game, yeah.
But exactly. But then you have the Zebras taking that chance away. And so they took it away from New Orleans 2 weeks ago. They took it away from us. All right, so so we have agreed here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. And then let's go to three more here in the second half. So the scoreboard's going to read 7-5 in terms of bad calls. The Lattimore tackle on Julio before the ball gets there on third down.
They miss one.
Okay, they missed that one badly. How about when Lattimore trucks Julio Jones down the near sideline and they call defensive holding and then pick up the flag? That was hot garbage, dude. And I looked at it, I backed it up, and I looked at the trajectory of the ball. That was a catchable ball for Julio Jones.
There's no question
that was a catchable ball.
At the moment, when it's happening, I did not think the ball was catchable. Even for
did you back it up and look at it again?
Yeah, I just caught live that one shot.
All right, well, because I needed to look. I backed it up, and I synced it up, and I'm telling you, Julio could have at least made a diving attempt on that ball. Okay. At least, no doubt about it. And then Julio catches the ball. The ball has broken the plane of the end zone, barely, and they say no touchdown. So that's three drives in a row in the second half that you got job.
It was Julio's time to get shafted on the catch, no catch. It's making its way. Every team is going to feel it. Every week in
the
NFL.
Though?
I felt like it was tough to take away. I think they botched that one to me. I think that's a touchdown.
All right, so Stan and Rick breaking it down, man. So the scoreboard reads, bad calls. 7 against the Falcons last week. 3 weeks ago, 5 against New Orleans. It all comes out in the wash. They're 1-1. The Falcons can still make the playoffs with a win against Carolina on Sunday. And, of course, they can win it if they lose and get a Seattle loss as well. Slice of Life is next. Owens and me are feeling some kind of way. A little downtrodden after Christmas in terms of, like, missing it and the euphoria of it all. That's next.
I think that's a travesty.
What are they?
Chariots of Fire.
Boo.
Wow.
The first
dun, 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 dun,
yeah, and other, I mean, the music, dun, we all know the music.
Dun, 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 dun.
I remember, oh, my God, is that a boring movie?
See, I remember this music more for the end of Vacation when Chevy Chase and Rusty
yes!
are running towards
yes!
Wally World.
That's so awesome.
Chevy Chase has shorts that Magic Johnson would be proud of.
That's... Get your fix of Rick and John on iTunes. Search 92.9 The Game. So what's your go-to drink?
Sounds like you guys fancy yourself drinkers, huh?
When was your last fist fight?
I'm gonna kick your...
Who really wears the pants in the family?
Nah.
Rick and John prove adulting is tough.
It's worse than we thought.
The Slice of Life on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the Kia Studios. The Slice of Life with Rick and John is brought to you by Shane Company. Blow her mind, not your budget, with an engagement ring from Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. All right. Good and bad moments from Christmas, if there are any bad moments. And this comes from Mark Owens and I. He's like, hey, dude, you know, I saw him this morning, Stan Norfleet in for John Michaels. And I'm like, what's up, Emo? He's like, what's up? I'm like, energy's down a little bit, man. Feel a little empty. And it's not, I'm not like depressed or anything like that, but just feel a little empty. And it's because I had such a good time over the weekend with my wife. And we just had a blast, man. We were in Chattanooga, the Rock City Christmas Light Display. Drive the 2 to 2.5 hours. For charity, it's a 2-hour drive. For most of you, it's going to be a 2.5 hour drive. She's a little bit of a lead foot. If you don't watch it, you'll get nauseous driving with charity.
Oh,
but she's good. She gets the job done. She gets you where you need to go. Anyway, we had an unbelievable time. And I'm walking around this Rock City garden with all the lights and stuff. And I'm with my wife having a blast. It's December 23rd. We're in Chattanooga. We're having like a weekend date. It was all awesome. And guess who I was thinking of? Mr. Jolly, Mr. Glass Half Full, Mr. 3-Day Weekend, Mr. Christmas, Mr. Vegas, Mark Owens. And the reason I was thinking of Mark Owens is because he loves Christmas lights. He loves everything about Christmas. What he does, like most of us use a washcloth. You know, we put a little soap in the washcloth and we wash our bodies. Mm-hmm. He takes garland and then rubs soap against it, and that's what he showers with is garland. That's how much he loves Christmas.
Mistletoe over the bedroom.
That was the good part, man.
Belt.
Going on the road, being in Chattanooga, and it turned Scrooge, it turned Bah Humbug into a Christmas nut, man. But I'm a little empty today. That's part of the bad of this. I'm a little empty, Stan.
For me, man, first of all, I was working, you know what I mean, doing the Falcons thing, and I get it. You know, that's just my role with the station right now. Wherever I can go, all hands on deck, that's fine. So I was getting it. The Falcons game depressed me a little bit, but it only depressed me so much because I knew there was still an opportunity for the Falcons to get in. Coming up this week, we'll continue talking about that matchup. So as a former athlete, and even, you know, if you just got your boys, like, I love social media. Most of the times I can't stand it because we use it the wrong way, guys. But when you see pictures and videos coming in from your boys and people from the neighborhood with their families, like, I remember running with these guys when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14, and now dude has four kids and they've got a home, he's got a career. Watching my guys grow up and be fathers that some of us didn't have as much growing up, to me, that's the great thing about Christmas, getting a chance to celebrate with your guys, even if they're in, you know, other countries, so on and so forth.
I love it, man. Stan Norfleet in for John Michaels. Let me give you another good. And this was very unusual because, M.O., Saturday was a big day for me in charity. We started out going to the aquarium, the Tennessee Aquarium in Chattanooga. And again, if you have not been there, it is exceptional. I am not an aquarium guy. I'm not a museum guy. I'm not a parade guy. I'm just not really into that stuff, Stan. Like, charity might want to take me to a play where there's actors on stage singing and acting out scenes.
Performing arts, not your thing.
Doesn't do a thing for me, okay? But this aquarium is off the charts. She loves it. She loves animals. See the little penguins and little otters and all that kind of stuff. She loves that stuff. So my boys had a window. They were with their mom all weekend, but we had a window where they were opening our presents, okay, on FaceTime. Right. At the Tennessee Aquarium. So we're at the aquarium. We're at a bench. We just kind of go off to the side. People are walking by, and we're FaceTiming with my boys as they're opening up, you know, a Todd Gurley jersey and, like, a Steelers hoodie and all the stuff that I got from my boys. So shout out to all the divorced dads and moms who have to do quirky stuff like that. But we open gifts on FaceTime at the aquarium in Tennessee.
M.O., I got a bad.
Talk to me.
This is Atlanta, Georgia. This is, for me, the best city in America. I love this place. But why are there not more things to do Christmas Day? I get it. Everybody wants to be with their families. But you got to have a fill-in guy. Like, that's me. I'm one of the fill-in guys on this station. I could not find anything to do other than movies with a young lady and her kids. You know, they were in town visiting. And I was trying to take them and, like, show them Atlanta. Everything is closed except the movie theater. I got a problem. Thumbs down, Atlanta. Give me more options on Christmas Day.
Why is Magic City? Why is Claremont Lounge? Why are they not open on Christmas Day? I feel you on that one.
How do you know whether they're open or not?
Yeah, M.O.
Because Uncle Frank's been in town for 2 weeks now. We're running out of things to do with him.
He's running out of things to do with
him. So you got to do something. I got no complaints. Like I said, we did about 12 parties in 10 days. But two funny elements. You know, I divorced from Fireball earlier this summer. Because there's a man who still tried to act like a frat boy. I drink Fireball like it was water. I'm in a tailgater hanging out. I went back to it over the holidays because you do the new drink. You mix Fireball and rum shot up. And that's a Cinnamon Toast Crunch shot. Now, if you haven't tried it, give it a shot. About 3 ounces of Fireball, about the equivalent of 3 shots Fireball, 3 shots rum shot, and mix them together. Maybe put it over a little ice. It's good. It's good going down. However, a little sugary, a little sweet. Woke up Christmas morning, hungover as a son of a gun because me and Big Brother Sam thought, hey, let's start drinking like we're 21 again. So my divorce from Fireball, we got back together. We kind of reconnected for a night and quickly separated again.
You realize why you left her in the first place.
You didn't make a kid out of the whole thing, did you?
We did not. No.
You just had to be sure.
We just had to be sure. Yeah, it's like one of those just go back, just wants to make sure I made the right decision. And I made the right decision. Christmas morning itself, phenomenal. I have a 4-year-old little girl. All she's been wanting and asking Santa for 6 months, American Girl doll. That's all she's been. She just goes to the magazine, circles everything in there. So Santa did a fantastic job, right? Santa, it looked like the American Girl factory in our living room on Christmas morning.
more American Girl doll crap than we know what to do with, right? Christmas morning. Wow. All right, baby girl, Santa came. Let's see what he brought you. She comes tearing into the living room. 4 years old, mind you. All she's wanted is American Girl doll. Comes tearing into the living room, and me and my wife are like, ha-ha, all right, here we go. Here we go. Best parents ever. Thank you, Santa. She goes, oh, my gosh. And we're like, yep. Feels good. Winning, feels good. Winning. She goes, crayons. Jumps to the floor, spends 30 minutes coloring, doesn't even touch any of the American Girl doll stuff. We are literally shoving it on her going, baby girl, look, you got the freaking American Girl doll you've been asking for since June. That's great, but look, finger crayons. Look what I can do. Like, those things are like, I don't know, maybe a dollar a pack.
But was she happy?
She was ecstatic.
The price we pay.
So
at what point did she get into the American Doll stuff?
Sometime after the lunch nap.
Are you serious? Yeah. It took that long?
Yeah, it took.
Wow.
She opened the doll and took it with us to brunch on Christmas morning. But yeah, it took her a little longer than we had anticipated. But I've just learned, keep it simple, stupid. You know what? No need to go crazy, Santa, next time. Just go to the dollar store and she'll be just as happy on Christmas morning.
Jason Marks, good and bad of Christmas, dude. Hit us.
Well, the bad was, you know, kind of like Stan, you know, we're on all hands on deck, so I had to work through the holiday season. But the good thing about it is I had 4 days off a couple weeks ago to go back home in order to spend that quality Christmas time with the family and reconnect and catch up and all that stuff. And the other good thing is that Waffle House is open on Christmas Day.
Yeah, my choices were Waffle House and Hudson Grill. So shout out to Hudson. They held your boy down. Games everywhere. And
I was going
to
say, very good choice.
You know what?
Hudson Grill, Wheelhouse, Waffle House, overrated.
I left out somebody. Ocean Air, right here in Midtown.
Love
Ocean Air. They held your boy down, too.
Nice.
2 days. Yeah, they do a great job over there, Ocean Air.
Are you living here in Midtown?
Yeah, I'm W Midtown guy.
I'm jealous, man.
Oh, it ain't like that. They just, you know, it's convenient.
That's what I'm jealous about.
You just develop a relationship. And I love that I can be in Buckhead in 10 minutes and I can be in downtown in 10 minutes. I can go either way. If something is damn open in this city on the holiday weekend, give your boy something that doesn't require a stop at ATM.
But don't you feel a little Armageddon-ish as you're walking around and driving around the streets of Atlanta and nobody's around?
It's weird.
Like, this is the apocalypse.
Good call, M.O. We went to the movie theater, Atlantic Station. By the way, I highly recommend if you got kids, go see Coco. Little Latin boy with the guitar, wants to be a singer. Great. I got kind of moved in there. It was one of those, I mean, because you see the little kids and
did one of the parents die?
I don't want to give it away. There is some death involved.
Why do they put death in these kids' movies? It just makes the mom and dad sadder than the kids at the movies.
Oh, I was crushed.
Aren't you getting misty and stuff?
I mean, watching the kids get emotional got me a little. And, you know, again, these aren't mine. But, you know, when you're responsible for entertaining, it kind of comes with territory. But that's all I got. Even being in Atlanta Station, it was like movie theater and ghost town.
All right, so a couple of things on the Falcons, man. Where was Don Terry Poe in the goal line scenarios for our Falcons? And does Devontae Freeman need to change his running style? I say yes. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Georgia, Oklahoma, New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl. The road to the national championship starts here. Dog Nation, it's on. WCGC Atlanta and WCGC HD1.
In an intercom communication station.
Atlanta Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
But for me, the best part was this.
Here's a moment you may have missed from Rick and John in 2017.
Roman Empire wants to sound off. What will you do for lower-level tickets?
I'm running to the Georgia Dome from Lawrenceville in a Falcon Speedo and making my wife get a Harry Douglas tramp stamp tattoo.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to take it deep. Do we have any men or women out there that would let their husband or wife go on a date with somebody else?
Indecent proposal?
For tickets.
How did Harry Douglas just out Kamala Kamala? How did that just happen?
Yeah, but the question is, when you say a night out, is it dinner and maybe a club?
It's whatever.
And then the walk of shame, or is it dinner and a club?
Wow.
And like,
well, Mark went there.
It's whatever that person
wants.
But
then how good the seats are, right?
Better be 50-yard line, Harry.
Somebody said not only would he let his wife go out on a date, he'd pick her up the next morning.
Oh, no.
Wow. That's what I'm talking about.
Listening to Rick and John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, we're reaching the end of the year, y'all. Playing some of the highlights of the Midday Show with Rick and John. We love you all so very much. And I know that not a lot of people on the roads right now. Maybe you're out shopping. Maybe you're at home, you know, because you're not working and stuff. We're thinking of you. We're nothing without you. And we hope you all had a great Christmas and that you're going to have a happy new year and a great New Year's Eve. Just remember to Uber, okay? Get it in. You can literally put the bottle over your mouth and just let it pour in as long as you have Uber. Okay.
And leave the Fireball alone. We are not advocates of Fireball. Of course, M.O. revisited that.
Just, you know, you go back to the well every now and then. Just maybe you're lonely and desperate and you're like, you know what? Hey, Fireball, you up?
So Fireball called you for a booty call?
The other way around.
Because
I graduated from Fireball. I didn't go much better. I graduated to Jack Fire because it has a little bit more of a cut to it, where Fireball feel like is just pure sugar. And 39-year-old Mark gets hung over way too easy, where Jack Fire's got a little less sugar to it. And so I just did the late night, hey, what you doing? You at home? You in bed?
I'm sitting here reminiscing about how we used to get it, and let's see, can we recreate this magic for the holidays?
Go ahead, Mark.
It's the holidays. I'm feeling festive. Are you feeling festive? Just want to see if, you know, maybe we try it. And then the next day you do that walk and you go, nope, this was a bad idea.
I think this is the first time in human history that Fireball has been used as an analogy for the booty call. I think it's the first time it's ever happened. So that's pretty amazing. We broke a new ground here on the Midday Show with Rick and John. Happy to have Stan Norfleet in here.
Thank you, man. Hung out
with Stan a little bit, but have not done a show with Stan yet. And we're an hour down, and it feels like we've done 5 minutes. That, my friend, is a good sign.
Boy, I love your energy, man. M.O., you guys do a great job. J. Marks, you know, I typically work with J. Marks on the weekend, but pleasure to be here, man. Appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir. Shout out to John Michaels and his family. He is spending time with them right now. Devontae Freeman needs to change his running style. Let me explain. Because a week or so ago, I said that he didn't when we were talking about concussions and does he need to change? You know, he's so violent. And does he need to change his running style? And I said, no. Well, I'm to the point where I'm coming off of that. And here's what I mean. I'm not saying I want Devontae Freeman to stop being shot out of a cannon. I'm not saying I want him to stop running violently. I just have one correction for Devontae Freeman. So I'm not looking for a running style
overhaul.
It's not
a complete overhaul, right?
I just need a tweak.
Okay.
Stan, at the point of impact, I need him to brace as opposed to deliver a blow. Because he is hard charging, trying to run over slash hurt the opposition, and the ball security for that split second goes out the window. And then it becomes about manhood. And I'm playing aggressive and I'm playing physical, and this is just the way I play. And to me, you have to, at that point of impact, you got to have gears and you got to brace and you've got to hug up on that ball. And I think he's more worried about delivering a blow to the defender than he is ball security. So just stand at the point of impact. I need Devontae Freeman to, like I said, find a gear. Like, it's akin to jumping out of a plane and you got a parachute on. And you just fall without the parachute for a minute. But at the very end, when you start to get worried about splatting on the ground, you pull it and the parachute goes up. So right at the point of impact, you pull the parachute. That's what Devontae Freeman needs to do. I don't know, Stan, if that's an impossibility for an NFL player who plays the way he plays. What I know is it is not working right now at the point of impact for Devontae Freeman. This is not, oh, he fumbled once. It's okay. You shrug it off and let's move on. This is repeated fumbles that are costing us games right now, Stan.
And Devontae admitted in the postgame, and we again, Chuck Smith and I doing the fifth quarter this past week. He said, look, man, there are a lot of things that you can work on as a professional football player. For me, ball security is one of those things. Here's the hard part. Parcells used to tell us in Dallas, listen, man, I'm not going to tell a runner how to run. So Devontae has gotten to this level and gotten a very lucrative contract approaching this thing a certain way. You're going to try and coach him up, but there's a fine line between trying to change his style, in other words, his mentality, even at the point of impact. There's no way I can see Devontae or anybody else. If you just, like, allow guys to blast you at that league, so if he hugs up on the ball and he stops turning his feet and he's just like, I'm just going to try and slither down, it's going to hurt more
than
trying to generate force going in the opposite direction.
Right, but you know I'm not saying that, right? I'm not saying –
you're saying more ball security.
I'm not saying turtle up at the point of impact. I'm saying that as instead of delivering a blow to the defender and risking the ball, don't deliver the blow to the defender and hug up on the ball a little bit more. So in other words, you're continuing the play. You are still running into that tackler, or you're trying to get around him and he's tackling you. But you are like, dude, you're 5'8", 200 pounds. I get it. You are probably the toughest pound for pound running back I've ever seen in my life. But dude, you're fumbling the rock. And something's got to change.
See, I would need to go look at, and I wish I had a football in here to demonstrate, there are 5 points of pressure on a football that running backs are taught. If your body is not touching the football, have you heard of this before?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was 3 points, but you're telling me it's five.
I've been taught 5 points.
Well, five is better than three. Tell me more.
And it's all predicated on, like, how you're running, right? Is it a short yardage situation? Are you catching the ball and trying to tuck it? But essentially, there are 5 points that should be touching the ball when you've got it protected correctly. The problem is, once you put on tape that you have a propensity to give it up, it doesn't matter. Just bodies, just sheer mass of dudes around, guys can tackle the football. And Devontae has opened up that proverbial Pandora's box that he'll lay it on the ground. So every defensive coordinator in the league is going to highlight, go take care of it.
Stan, let me ask you this. You're making good points here, but for Devontae, is he giving it to them or are they taking it away from him?
I think he's
giving it to them. I don't see guys
taking it away.
So you see hat on ball, you see guys stripping it out. I don't. I see Devontae running into guys trying to kill them, and he drops the ball.
All right,
in the
so
process.
Let's say what happened. Right, I think it was on the 4-yard line. What happened on the play is Alex Mack gets blown up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the butt fumble in New York.
Yep.
That's kind of what this is. Alex Mack got blown up. Devontae didn't have the seam that he needed, that he was assured would be there. And essentially, the butt hit ball at the right – ball comes out. And the defenders had a lot to do with that. So I don't look at that specific fumble from the other day as Devontae was trying to do too much. But there have been moments that I can understand where you come from.
I basically agree with that with one exception. To me, he just catches it, or he gets the handoff, and it, vroom, and he's just going. And you know, did you not see Mac there? Why didn't you, you know, move to the left a little bit?
It happens so quick, Rick.
But I'm just saying.
It happens
like,
so quick.
So maybe that is a specific situation, to your point, where it's not contact, where he's trying to run over a defender. It obviously was a butt fumble type of scenario. But to me, there needs to be more vigilance with that football for Devontae Freeman. For whatever reason, the message that Dan Quinn is constantly delivering about the ball, it ain't reaching Devontae because he's putting the ball on the ground too much. The game against New Orleans when we won, where we're running out the clock, and he fumbles the freaking ball.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Those are losing plays. Those are non-playoff team plays.
You can't give the ball up, right? I use this metric all the time. In the NFL, if you are +2 in the turnover margin, you win the game 84% of the time.
Sounds about right.
You just can't give up the football. I think I need to see cut-ups, and I'm sure Dan Quinn has. Dan Quinn at some point has shown or will show Devontae, here's every fumble you've had since you've been on this roster. What are the similarities? What are the differences? What can you work on? But here's the part that can bite you in the butt. He starts running down the field with the ball in both hands, you know, literally in his chest with both hands crossed in his chest, trying not to fumble, and he forgets how to run. Like, at some point, you have to take the good with the bad.
But I don't want him running in space with two hands on the ball. Mm-hmm. When you – running backs, no. And if you get blindsided from you know, the side or something like that, that's a different story.
Different.
But when you are facing a defender like he did T.J. Ward, and you're like, I'm running over this dude, you need to be more careful about running over that dude. That's all I'm saying.
It's a valid point.
He's my second favorite Falcon. I love Devontae Freeman. Keanu Neal is my first. They're my favorite Falcons because of the aggression and the violence that they play with.
Sure.
I'm just saying, when you make that decision – Stan Norfleet, he's getting down in a tackling position, but I'm going right at him. I'm putting my right shoulder into him, and I'm going to run him over because I'm a message-sending running back. You got to be a little bit more careful with the ball at that point of impact because I think he's losing that a little bit.
So would you feel the same way? In other words, today, if Alex Mack's butt doesn't hit the ball, are we having this conversation today? In other words, we're not.
I've wanted to have this conversation. It's been brewing. And then I saw that play on Sunday, and I'm like, that's it. I'm going to the air. I want Devontae Freeman to change his running style at the point of impact. I want everybody to listen to me. Don't go to the barbershop and say, Camel West Devontae to turn his game inside out. That's not what I'm saying, people. at the point
when he
of
sees
impact,
the ball coming,
that is
trigger.
Where he is fumbling. He's
ball security.
The ball's not squirting out willy-nilly, okay? These are contact plays where the ball is coming loose. I just need more vigilance with the football at the point of impact. That's all I need.
You know what's really interesting about this conversation? When you think about Adrian Peterson and his fumbles, Brandon Jacobs and his fumbles, to some degree, Tiki Barber, meaning his stature, typically it's more bigger backs or upright running style backs that have an issue fumbling the football. Low, squatty body guys very rarely fumble the football at this rate.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, DQ and really Sark and the staff, they got to coach him up on that. I don't know what the fix all is for that. But I'm just a proponent, man, that at some point, and you better be thinking about this before you give a guy a contract like that. Like,
but fumbly wasn't an issue. It's just it's a problem that's happening right now. Look, I mean, you look back at Devontae's track record, he is not a fumbler. That is why this is so weird, and that's why we're talking about this. Stan Norfleet in for John Michaels breaking down the Falcons' loss to the Saints, and we're on Devontae Freeman and his running style. And I just think at the point of impact, I need him to let the parachute go. Slow down just a hair so you can be more vigilant with the football. You
right,
can
Cam.
Still deliver a blow, but you'll be better able to hold on to the ball.
Cam, we're here, but the numbers are saying something.
What do we got?
So 2017, Devontae Freeman has been credited with 4 fumbles. He's only lost one. So the one he lost was yesterday. If these numbers are correct.
Correct. Okay, so we had an offensive lineman land on his fumble in that Saints game, but he still put the ball on the ground.
Sure, which is in the fumble category. Mm-hmm. And I get what you're saying. I don't even want – in other words, Devontae shouldn't even have 4 fumbles.
That's what I'm saying.
I wish we could see – and at some point we'll be able to pull per game and we could see each fumble. I would love to see the tape. And I don't get caught up in fandom, guys, because I've been privy to levels of football where – it's circumstantial. Like, each scenario might be different. So I want to see what are the similarities in all 4 fumbles. The one yesterday, I'm kind of putting that more on Alex Mack and just kind of a freak thing. Alex Mack butt flash before Devontae was expecting it to, ball goes on the ground.
Okay, but
the other
ahead,
3 fumbles, I'd like to see what the consistency is in those.
Here's the thing, though. I'm not going to put that on Alex Mack because if we're in cars, okay, mm-hmm. who is – and we get a fender bender. Who is culpable? Who is at fault for the fender bender? The driver from behind.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah,
so Freeman is the driver from behind. He can see it. Like I'm saying, and I'm nitpicking here. To me, I need a right foot in the dirt, and I need some kind of wiggle move over to the left. So you don't run right into the back of your offensive lineman and give the damn ball away.
Now, you do have a point in this. Whether he lost the fumbles or not. So, free, this is...
How about the fumble against Tampa Bay? Trying to crush some guy at the goal line.
That's legit.
The ball pops out, and luckily Toy Lolo was there. Same thing with the fumble at the end of the Saint game. Dude, it's not about sending a message. You're trying to run out the clock. You know what I'm saying?
No, you got to be smart situation football.
You need a safe carry right there where it's all about the ball. Even more about the ball than getting the first down. But you got bailed out by who was a traitor that fell on that one?
Somebody did, yeah.
So, I mean, what my point is, Freeman's been living dangerously with these fumbles, and we've been getting away with it. Didn't get away with it against the Saints.
To your point, so as a Falcon, Devontae Freeman has fumbled the ball 8 times.
In 4 years?
In 4 years.
I'll take
that. So this is his 4th season. He's fumbled the ball 8 times. 4 of those 8 happened this year. So to your point, he hasn't had this issue to this degree coming in. Now, he basically, through 4 years, has lost 1 fumble each season.
Right.
So with a regular season game to go, in the regular season, he's on about the pace he'd been on in terms of numbers lost. But those 4 for 1 season, way too high. You can't be averaging a fumble for the whole year, and then this year you've got 4 of them.
That's
so
what I'm
something's
saying.
Going on there, and Devontae recognizes it. He says, I've got to be more conscious of ball security in given situations.
So to me, just check up slightly at the point of impact. You can still deliver.
I need to see how he's carrying it too.
You don't have to blast the guy and send him into the concussion protocol.
Yeah.
Hold on to the ball. Get the first down. I also wanted to ask you, and you know what? I have a theory. If Dontari Poe is lead blocking for Devontae Freeman on first down, it's probably a touchdown. And then you don't even get to second down and the butt fumble with Alex Mack. And if Don Terry Poe is in there on second down and Devontae is running behind him on an off-tackle joint and Alex Mack gets blown up, it doesn't even matter. He's going off tackle, and he's running behind Don Terry Poe. I just don't get it. There were goal line scenarios against the Saints, and I did not see Don Terry Poe as a lead blocker, whereas, Stan, we've seen that all year in the jumbo package at the goal line, and it's been working great. Why didn't we see that?
For me, I shouldn't have to see Don Terry Poe on the goal line. If the core fundamental purpose of this Falcons offense, and this is coming from Dan Quinn, not Stan Norfleet, we are a running on the track zone running scheme team. Everything we do is predicated on the zone run blocking scheme. They haven't been doing that well this year. And Jeff Benedict, myself, and Chuck Smith talked about it during the handoff on Sunday night. This offensive line, and I'm pretty sure the tape will suggest this, got dominated. It doesn't matter if you put Poe in there or not. You shouldn't have to if you aren't doing your bread and butter things to the level of championship caliber, which allows you to do some play action and move the pocket and, you know, throw the ball deep down the field and those types of things. I don't want to see Poe on the goal line. And it's nothing against Poe. I'm not a gimmicky guy. In the NFL, you got to be able to run the ball when they know it's coming and you know you have to. That's championship caliber football. The New England Patriots last year in the fourth quarter, how did they win the Super Bowl? James White went that way. Belichick understand, like, that's just, and I know that's tough to hear, but that's just a fact. Dudes that win titles have to run football without gimmicks. You got to be able to run it downhill. So, Coleman, you're the fullback on the roster. That we let DeMarco go. We brought you in for this purpose. Dude, go make a hole for Devontae.
I mean, it's a great rip, dude. I agree with everything you're saying right there, but we have been using Poe.
You have been
and
using
it,
him.
Stan, do you not agree that
it
it's
has
worked?
Been effective, yes.
Oh, then why get away from it in the Saints game?
Specifically in this game, I wonder if there was a snap count issue on defense. I need to go look at Poe's actual snaps. So in other words, Dan may have
come
said,
on, Stan. Don't get this is a bloodbath hate rivalry
all
game.
All I'm saying is guys have to be mindful. Am I going to use my big man on offense on the goal line, or am I going to ask my big man to make sure he's ready to go on defense when that's Drew Brees, a Hall of Fame over there?
And I say it's week 16. I need you both. He has put himself, made himself available for offense for a select group of plays. I'm not measuring snaps in week 16 against New Orleans. There's no way.
It's a long season, man. Long season.
All right, we get the ball player take and we get the non-ball player take, and I love it. Having fun with Stan Norfleet, man. He's in for John Michaels next. Tony Schiavone is in here. We're talking dogs. We're less than a week away from the semifinal win that they're going to have against the Sooners. That's next.
Sick 'em.
But for me, the best part was this.
Here's a moment you may have missed from Rick and John in 2017.
And by the way, for the people that have texted in and asked, are we still getting tattoos? Well, only one of us was actually allowed to go get a tattoo, and I do have an appointment.
No way.
At 3 o'clock on Monday.
Now, is Knox Bardeen of 92.9thegame.com going to be there filming it and
no,
all that?
No, because I'm getting additional work other than just the Falcon-related tattoo. So
are you getting it all done?
Yeah.
Is it going to be like you're going to the car wash of inkness?
Yeah, I'll be there for a couple hours.
You know, if you go to get your car an oil change, they'll find 15 things that need to be done.
Yep.
If you've got a lot of tattoos, and John does, do they look at all your tattoos and say, that one could use a touch-up, and this one could use a touch-up?
No,
and
normally, because I know there's one that needs to be colored. My ibis is, the orange is faded because I'm in the sun too much. My elbow tattoo needs to be recolored, but I may not mess with that one because that one hurt like hell.
And your Color Me Bad one is starting to fade just a little bit, so you might want to...
It just says, I want to X you up now.
Thanks for listening to Rick and John. And if you missed anything, go subscribe on iTunes. Search 92.9 The Game. I want to X
you up. Happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas, ho, 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 and eventually Happy New Year. Playing some of the highlights of the Midday Show with Rick and John. And again, we love you so much, man, for making us a part of your day. And we love meeting you guys at, you know, Twin Peaks and Buckhead, Twin Peaks and Kennesaw, all that stuff. And these guys are going to love to meet you this Saturday for College Football Game Time presented by Bud Light. It's at McCray's Tavern in Smyrna. Randy McMichael, Chris Goforth, and Bryant McFadden broadcasting live from 11 to 3. That voice is Stan Norfleet. He is in for John Michaels. And we have Tony Schiavone sticking around the Kia Studios as well.
Hey, what's up,
for
man?
Some dog talk. Tony, you're a legend. It is a blast to be on the air with you here.
You know what? Stop that right now. Okay? I appreciate that, but it's good to talk to both of you guys.
My man.
Tony, yeah.
So Stan and I were just talking, and he said he's really worried about Baker Mayfield. He thinks the Dogs might have a Baker Mayfield problem. Are you with him, or do you think, like I do, that the Georgia defense will give up some big plays but ultimately be up to the task?
Well, I kind of put him in the as being able to throw the ball like Drew Locke with Missouri, and he burned the Dogs for a couple of long plays. Dogs still won it. I don't know, though, and I get to this point. Big 12, I don't know if the Big 12 teams have faced a defense like Georgia in the SEC. So that gives me some confidence coming in. They got so much speed. You go back to the old thing, it's won in the trenches, lost in the trenches. The Dogs can get just – surround you and chase you down, great lines to tackles, you know, great angles. So I think they'll combat that. That's my feeling. But, of course, I'm a homer. So there you go.
No, I think that's a good analysis on the game. I actually totally agree with you, and I don't think that's just coming, Stan, through red and black glasses that Tony Schiavone wears for 3 hours every Saturday. But I don't believe that's where this take is coming from.
Listen, this Georgia team has surprised me. That I didn't see this coming. And, Tony, I don't know if you in the preseason predicted that they would be on a run.
No, like
if
this.
You'd have told me Eason goes down in the first series of the game and Georgia still winds up in the college football playoff, I wouldn't have believed it. Now, they're here, and that's fine. I can understand the stigma that comes with the Big 12, especially defensively. I feel the same way about all those zone read spread teams, the Oregon and TCU teams of the past. I knew that wasn't championship caliber football. But every once in a while, we have a guy in college football, and the guy is just different. And he takes his team and he puts them on his back, and he just makes plays in spite of maybe, you know, some deficiencies in talent in some other areas. A couple things and I'm out. Number one, Georgia has not seen anybody like Baker Mayfield all season. Now, I understand your comparison, but this guy is different. What did Nick Saban's defenses, headed up by Kirby Smart, have issues with for the last 5 years?
Mobile quarterbacks.
That can throw the rock. That's what this guy does. Never forget, same thing, offensive line play. Oklahoma has a first or second round left tackle, too. They've got a first or second round tight end, too. They've got a first or second round linebacker, too. There are NFL dudes on the OU roster on both sides of the ball. I do think, lastly, that Oklahoma has seen something, some semblance of Georgia defense, and it's what they did to Ohio State. And Ohio State has NFL guys up and down that roster on defense as well. Those are the reasons, Tony, right, why I go, this one isn't a slam dunk for the Dogs.
No, it's not a slam dunk. You're right about that, Stan. It's just I just feel defense wins games. And
sure, I agree with that.
So – you're right about Baker Mayfield, too. They've never seen a quarterback that can make things happen like him.
Why couldn't anybody stop Tim Tebow?
Well, let me back up real quick.
He was big as a linebacker, for one thing.
I don't think it's fair to compare the Ohio State defense with the Georgia defense. I don't. In terms of future NFL talent, I think it is. But in terms of what – would the Georgia defense have given up 55 points to the Iowa Hawkeyes?
See, that's the easy one.
Well, I mean, but it's true. In the next week, Iowa did not score an offensive touchdown against Wisconsin. Okay? They got two pick sixes, and that was it. They go from 55 to zero. So, to me, in Ohio State, loaded with talented guys, but they turned the switch off and on. Stan, you saw that. They turned it off and on all year. They'd sleepwalk through these games and win 50-3, but the defense would have like one sack. If you're beating a terrible team like Rutgers or one of these teams 50-3, shouldn't you have 8-9 sacks? I don't know. Like, you should just be eaten if you're a defensive end. So there were a lot of empty games statistically from the Ohio State defense. I just think they were kind of mailing it in at times and coasting. Did the Dogs defense coast at all this year?
No, not at all.
So that's my point. The Dogs gripped it and ripped it and chewed up their opponent all year long. Ohio State picked and choose their spots.
So, go ahead, Tony.
You go back to the Auburn game, though, at Auburn, when things started going wrong and started going downhill. No, they never mailed into that game, but they were just things like that happen in football. You know, things start to go wrong for you. And, of course, now you go back and you think, well, that was at Auburn, and they had everything going for them, and I really believe in home field advantage, and that you got them on the neutral site now, right? and they turned the tables on him. But Dogs still gave up 40 points in that ball game, so they can be had. At least they were showed.
A couple nuggets, right? And I can understand the Iowa loss, which ultimately ended up keeping Ohio State out. I thought Ohio State should have gotten in. That's fine.
What?
Ohio State's
resume. Are you serious?
Ohio State's resume is so much better than Alabama's. It's not even close. We can do a separate. I know this is about the Dogs.
Okay, so one o'clock when Knox Burning drops by, we bicker with Knox. We're going to bicker about that. I totally disagree.
It's embarrassing that they let Alabama
Give me
in,
a
but that's
break.
Fine. So, Tony, right, there are a couple metrics that I use when I evaluate football. You know, scoring offense, scoring defense. There are special teams metrics I use, red zone, third down, NFL, 2 minute. But whether it's college or NFL, I always get caught up in yards per play and yards per play allowed. This goes back to my Ohio State point. Ohio State this past year surrendered 4.2 yards per play. Georgia surrendered 4.3. So the Ohio State defense, up and down, by and large, is on par on a per down basis with Georgia. Secondly, I think Oklahoma, in a one-dimensional situation, Georgia can do one thing, and they run the football.
Right.
They do not have a receiver due to Dogs, and I'm not trying to play contrarian, but I feel like they don't have a receiver? They don't have a receiver in the top 15 in yardage in the SEC. That ain't even the nation. That's in the SEC.
But you don't like Wims and Godwin's ability to go up and get it?
They are talented. What I'm saying is if I'm who's up there? Lincoln Riley. If I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm trying to put 9 in the box. Chubb, Michelle, I'm not letting you get going. Holyfield, Swift, it's not happening. The running game today is not happening. There's been one freshman in the history of college football that has led his team to a national championship, right? Jaleel Holloway, 1985. I'm daring you to throw your way to a national championship to guys that haven't been productive on terms of the upper echelon in the SEC all year. I don't think you can do it. Now, Oklahoma's got to go do it, but I think that's the blueprint, Tony.
Yep. Very well said. I agree with that. I agree with that. You got to make him throw the ball. And teams have made him throw the ball. You know, he doesn't have to have the big numbers to be successful. And he doesn't have to, you know, you're right about Wims. You're right about Godwin. You know, everybody will say, we hear this so much with the Dogs Network, that they're not throwing enough to the tight ends. And that's baloney. But they're going to have to make him throw the ball to win. They really are.
And look at problems.
But I'm not. But look, and in terms of, first of all, if they put, I believe that Fromm will carve up that Oklahoma secondary if they just leave it up like that, like one-on-one coverage with all these guys. I've seen Fromm make that 50-50 ball perfectly all year long, the back shoulder throw on the sideline or at the near pylon in the end zone all year long. And let me go back to your stat. That was a great stat on the yards per play allowed. 4.2 for Ohio State, 4.3 for Georgia. Would we not agree that the SEC, from top to bottom, way better than the Big Ten this year?
Than the Big 12?
No,
Oklahoma?
No, no.
Oh, better than the Big Ten. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the Big Ten is a better conference than the SEC.
What?
I think
You are out of your mind.
I think Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, to some degree Michigan. I'm not big on Wisconsin, but I'm going to include them in the conversation. I think their top half – is better than the SEC top half.
But I'm talking overall. So I'm talking about like all of the layups that Ohio State had. And I can pull up their schedule right now. But it was layup after layup after layup. And Georgia had some layups for sure. But you talk about a Mississippi State game. Let's go through Ohio State here. Indiana, cupcake.
Illinois is bad.
UNLV, cupcake. Rutgers, cupcake. Maryland, cupcake. Nebraska, cupcake. Then the Penn State game. Then they lose 55-24 to Iowa. Then it's 48-3 against Michigan State. Then cupcake Illinois. You beat Michigan and you beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. That is way more cupcakey than the Georgia schedule.
Georgia's resume is better, but as a conference is what I thought we were going. As a conference, I believe if you were to take their teams and roll it out, neutral site, go play, Kentucky's not beating Iowa. They're not. Iowa, the second college football playoff ranking that came out, and this is why I defend Ohio State. The second ranking, not the initial, the second one. Iowa was ranked number 20 in the country. So this is, and they ended up 7-5 going to a bowl game. This is an Iowa team that's better than the average fan.
So hold on. You're trying to prop up Iowa to pour water on the terrible loss by Ohio State? Is that what I'm hearing?
No. Terrible losses happen, for goodness sake. Last year, Clemson loses to Pitt. This year, they lose who got Clemson this year? Syracuse. Syracuse, which is better than advertised. Good teams get tripped up along the way. Ohio State's resume at the conclusion of championship weekend, the full body of work, was better than Alabama's. If that jersey wasn't crimson and white with that resume, if that was Georgia Tech, they wouldn't get that benefit of the doubt.
But if Georgia played Ohio State's schedule, they would have allowed fewer yards per play than Ohio State. That is the point that I am trying to make. They would have been even better against Rutgers and Maryland. Like, you look here. Illinois wouldn't have scored 14 points against the Georgia Bulldogs. I can tell you that right now.
Everything that I've seen metric-wise says that, and that's the metrics, and of course we watch the games, that the Georgia defense is closer to Ohio State than any offense that you could compare to Oklahoma's offense. So the defenses are in the same ilk. That offense that they got down in Norman or up in Norman, it's different, man.
Tony Schiavone, any final words here?
No, I agree that the SEC had a down year, so probably top to bottom the Big Ten was better this year because Florida wasn't good.
Tennessee's a train wreck.
Kentucky was not as advertised. LSU still had a pretty good year.
South Carolina was better. Was okay.
But overall, there's always better football to me in the SEC.
Well, the best football in the country is played in the ACC. It's been that way for the last 5 years. We all know that, right?
Tell him, Stan.
Right, Emo? Wow.
Tell him, Tony, appreciate it.
We don't want to bring facts to this conversation, do we?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a sports show. We don't need facts.
Keep Wake Forest. Keep Wake Forest in your dreams.
All right, Tony Schiavone, we appreciate it, man. He'll be coming back with updates here shortly. College football cheat sheet is next. Dog fans, which side of the ball do you feel better about heading into the matchup with Oklahoma? Offense or defense? 404-741-0929. Get involved. Rick Kamlis, Stan North. Fleet in for John Michaels on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Another hate text.
I'm Tony.
As long as you don't cause me any pain, I won't have to punch you in the face.
Whoa! You literally said that?
Yeah, we made this deal, and we shook hands on it.
Rick and John have the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I know it's the day after Christmas. You've got a tryptophan hangover from all the turkey you ate yesterday, but give us a call, 404-741-0929. We won't bite you like you bit that bird yesterday. Our College Football Cheat Sheet brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC Tune-Up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. You heard a great highlight there from Paul Bible. He is not here. Jason Markson for him. John Michaels is off. It's the holidays. It's kind of what happens, man. People have vacation days left, and they use them. Stan Norfleet is in for John.
Thank you, bro.
So, Stan, we're having a blast, man. And it did get bickery in the previous segment, and I love that. We're going to get back to that with Knox Bardeen at 1 o'clock. Top of the hour, by the way. Right back to the Falcons. And, Stan, we're going to ask the people, Falcons fans, do you feel like you got screwed? Or do you get it that what goes around comes around? We're going to talk about that at the top of the hour with your calls, and we'll take calls right now on these dogs. 404-741-0929. Stan, which side of the ball do you feel better about for the Georgia Bulldogs, offense or defense, heading into their matchup with Oklahoma?
You got to feel better about the offense. Just your propensity to run the football. Wynn and those boys on the offensive line did a fantastic job this year. That was one of the areas I wanted to see coming into the season, get a little bit better, the continuity. They had some youth last year as well. So it's like if you can run the ball effectively, you limit drastically the opportunity for bad things to happen to a freshman quarterback. Run the ball, pass pro, dink and dunk, and just run your offense. How did Clemson beat Alabama a year ago? Plays. Tempo, plays. George is good, but they aren't deep. If Oklahoma cranks out, and I don't even know how many plays they're running. I can look that up here in a little bit. If Oklahoma can get that tempo up, you can wear down. Any defense wears down. I think to some degree it happened to the Falcons in the Super Bowl. That's just a lot of snaps, man.
No question.
The game is just not designed for dudes on defense to be playing that many snaps.
And you were down guys. You were missing key players, you know?
Yeah.
So I know I think fatigue was a huge problem for the Falcons.
So I would go advantage Georgia offense to answer your question directly.
The side of the ball that I feel better about is defense because I do disagree with you, my friend. I think that Ohio State, on paper, the numbers look pretty good. I just watched a lot of Ohio State football this year, and I was like, where is it? Where is the spark? Where's the oomph? Where's the dominance? Where's the invincibility? And I didn't see it. I did see that from the Georgia defense. I saw suffocating defense. Look, Roquan Smith is by far the best defensive player that Oklahoma will face all year. By far. Nobody even close.
I'll agree with that.
I'll allow you to scan.
No, I'm just going real quick.
Ohio State doesn't have a player that even comes close to Roquan Smith.
Ohio State's got a couple guys on the back end that are going to be top 15 picks, certainly top first-round picks, but Roquan won the buckets. I mean, he's a real deal. He'll be a top 15 guy himself. I got no problem with that.
And then you've got Bellamy, you've got Carter, you've got Thompson in the middle. You've got all these studs. I feel really good about the Georgia defense. Listen to what I'm saying here. They ain't stopping Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I think they are going to get a 7-3, get a stop here, get a turnover there. I think they are just going to send a little play here, a little play there, Stan. And so I think that Oklahoma will get to 31. That's what I'm predicting. I got 41-31 final score.
Wow.
Very close game, very high scoring game, back and forth. And I think Georgia just is going to eventually, you know, get that fourth quarter TD, make it a two-score game, and then ride it out. But I feel very good about the Georgia defense to at least limit Baker Mayfield and not let him tilt the machine to the tune of 40, 42, 45. I think if you keep Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma in that 28-32 point range, I feel very confident. Look at Georgia's game by game. They didn't win 27-3. They put up big numbers on people in the 40s, in the 50s, and they did tilt the machine. Not all the time, but very frequently and very consistently. And this Oklahoma defense falls in line with the other defenses that Georgia had their way with. But I know I'm in a roundabout way here, but I'm going to take the defensive side of this. We're asking Dog fans, which side of the ball do you feel better about heading into the Oklahoma game?
I would caution Georgia of thinking that Oklahoma is a one-trick pony. Rodney Anderson, who was in the news because of the allegations with the sexual assault / rape, he's cleared. And say what you want about the dude. People may not, just living in Texas, I was in Houston and Dallas, I pay attention to Big 12 football, not as much as ACC and SEC, obviously, but he had 960 yards and 11 touchdowns on the ground. It reminds me, and this is just, I'm a creature of habit, and as former personnel people, we always think about comparables. Like, what's the comp? I saw what a healthy Kerryon Johnson and Stidham did to that Georgia defense, and I'm going Baker Mayfield and Rodney Anderson, and I go neutral site. This thing is – all the ingredients are there for trouble, trouble.
All right, let's take it to the phones, man. Stan Norfleet, he's keeping it real, and I don't disagree. It's going to be a hell of a game, and Oklahoma presents a heck of a challenge for our Dogs. But let's go to James right here. James, it's our college football question of the day, brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Which side of the ball do you feel better about for the Dogs heading into the Oklahoma game?
I got to agree with Stan, man. I guess I feel better about the offense because I think to beat Oklahoma, you have to have an offense that can score at will. And I don't see Georgia defense stopping Oklahoma. And if Oklahoma gets up a couple of touchdowns, it's over with because your offense is not going to be able to pass their way back into the game. So if you get down two touchdowns, the game is over. You might as well hang it up because the game is over with because you're not going to be able to keep up with Oklahoma.
James, really appreciate it, man. To that point, John Michaels thinks that if Oklahoma hits 30, it's game over. That Georgia cannot win that football game. And like I said, my final score is 41-31. I think Georgia can win a high-scoring game with Baker and the Sooners.
I don't think they can win that game. If Oklahoma at any point goes up two scores, that's ball game. This Georgia team just isn't built that way. And when you go look at Jake Fromm and what they've asked him to do, on the year, Jake Fromm is averaging 17.7 attempts per game. You look at his last three games. They are a bit. Kirby has got him on a pitch count. So if you aren't accustomed to getting the ball out 30, 35 times a game and put it up, flip the script, if Oklahoma's down by two scores, how many times have we seen them come right back? Styles make fights, you know that.
Yeah.
And this is one of the traditional heavyweight, you know, a guy that prides himself. It's almost like Ali Frazier, two different styles. If Oklahoma rope-a-dope their way to a win, it wouldn't surprise me.
Let's see what Nick has to say about the rope-a-dope of it all in our college football cheat sheet. Nick, which side of the ball are you feeling better about for our Dogs heading into this matchup with the Sooners? What says you, Nick?
The defense can contain Baker. It's going to be a defensive game on Georgia's side, bottom line.
I love it, Nick. I love the confidence, man, and he's talking defense. I'm talking defense as well. If the Dogs win this game, I mean, they're going to have to get a stop or two again. Red zone, just take three instead of seven a couple of times. It's going to be the difference in this game. Let's go to Kasten in Smyrna. Kasten, you're on the Midday Show with Rick and John. What's up?
Yeah, I think it's defense, man. And I can't believe we're comparing Ohio State and their numbers to an SEC team, especially seeing how Ohio State got obliterated last year when they got let in. So it's definitely defense.
Is this 2017? I'm just asking.
Kasten, appreciate the call.
This is 2017, right?
It's a different year, but I don't feel like there's much different with Ohio State. They still got that same choky quarterback.
Who just led them to a title?
Against Wisconsin and Alex Hornibrook. I'm not impressed.
And I'm not big on Wisconsin either. And I had that conversation.
The Badgers.
I think Wisconsin.
You can have Hornibrook.
Yes.
Okay, but put him in a chest and put him in the attic and never let him out. That guy sucks.
If you aren't watching Ohio State, and if you don't look at their personnel, see, a lot of people, they just watch the highlights and the end score. Go watch the actual game. And the SEC is getting all of this credit, and I'm not crushing the SEC. I just don't think they're as great this year as advertised.
All right, Stan, this is great, man. This is it's been a very bickery show, and I'm digging it, man. Let's go.
Energy's up, right?
No, it is. Yeah. It is. You have brought the energy, and you've sent a charge through this show. Stan Norfleet, Big Rich, you're on with Rick and John. Here's Stan Norfleet in for John Michaels. Which side of the ball are you feeling better for these Dogs in their game against Oklahoma?
It's got to be the offense and the run game, guys. The best way to beat Baker Mayfield is with him standing on the sideline next to the coach. So what you got to be thinking is 4 yards every play. 4 yards every play gets you a first down every third down. You have the ball, you control the clock, you keep them on the sideline, then you turn them into that one-trick pony that we're afraid they may not be because they're not going to get a chance to set up their offense. We run the ball, we control the ball, we control this game.
Reggie, my man, I really appreciate the phone call there. A lot of passion. I hear it from you guys. I hear it from you Dog fans. It is approaching game time. We're less than a week away, and I can hear it in your voice right now. You guys are getting into it. You guys are getting feisty about it, and that is awesome. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, we talk Falcons. We do it every day. And we've got some callers right now. Join them, 404-741-0929. Sunday, Saints game. Do you feel like we got screwed? Or after that weird, bizarre game a couple of weeks ago, does what go around come around? Rick and John, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Weekday mornings on The Game, it's John and Hugh.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.